ever hold.
Listen to more episodes right now at soundbeat.org. Soundbeat is produced at the Belfer Audio Archive, Syracuse University Libraries. I'm Brett Berry.
K-A-K-U.
I just feel awkward silences with my laughter.
88.5 FM. It's time to pound the poi on the local show. K-A-K-U-F-M Kahului Maui, the voice of Maui.
On the local show, it is Thursday afternoon, Fridays today. Okay, right here on KAKU 88.5 FM, the voice of Maui. Broadcast out of Akaku Maui Community Media Center in downtown Kahului, Derry Road. Yes, sir. And today we're going to be talking about some films. I recently watched one movie. I was I did say last week I was supposed to watch Nosferatu, but spring cleaning is happening at the house. So I was like, I can't be watching this and then doing that, you know. So one thing had to be done and sacrificed. But I did get into a TV series that I know is, I think it's done already. There's only like a 5-season run or something like that of the show, but I have only gotten back into it after so long. So I'll be talking about that one later on. I also have on for my movie review is a Prodigal Son film. Completely, you know, maybe Nepo Baby movie. It's a Nepo Baby movie, but hey, it's raw. You gotta appreciate the youngins coming out. I mean, look at Stephen King. He's got his son Joe Hill. Is it Joe?
Joe Hill?
Joe Hill. He I seen a recent picture of father and son side to side. And I was like, okay, so this is Stephen King, you know, senior citizen Stephen King right here. And then I'm looking at Stephen King 1985.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what he looks like. He looks like his dad from 1985. Yeah. I swear, like okay, I'm directing a great movie right now. It's called Maximum Overdrive. Yeah. Kind of like that year. Stephen King, that look, okay, but yeah.
And of course we have Osgood Perkins knocking it out of the box office.
Yes, Osgood Perkins,
speak.
You know, his father, amazing actor, legendary actor in, you know, not only dramatic film but also horror films and stuff like that, because he is the Norman Bates. You know, I mean, I don't. When I think of Norman Bates, I don't think of Vince Vaughn.
I almost forgot that movie existed.
I don't think of Vince Vaughn, and I don't think of Anne Heche. Although, you know.
R.I.P.
Anyways, yeah, let's get it started. On your end, you watched a couple of good movies.
Yeah. First time watches, I saw 1982's Alone in the Dark.
Ooh,
and I know that was out of a recommendation from you.
Then
I recently watched VHS Beyond.
Anthology.
Anthology. I know you just talked about 85 about a couple months ago, right?
Yeah. I watched 85 on Halloween time. And have yet to crack into any of the other ones because it's a long... I mean, this... I don't know. They have like 8 films already or something like that in the series?
I think Beyond would be 7. I can. So there's 1, 2, Viral... 94, 99, and then 85. Or 84. Wait, you might be right. It might be
like 8 or 9 already by now.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. You're probably right. There, you know what? Beyond might be 8. I swear there was like an 84, Beyond. 85 somewhere.
And that's the latest one. I think I've seen clips from it, and I was like, I don't want to watch any more anything clips. Yeah. If I see any clips coming from this anthology film, I might not want to watch it.
Yeah.
But I did see some parts of some clips of it, and I'm like, oh my God, this looks like it's going to be epic. Yeah.
So I know that, were we getting into that?
We're getting into Beyond?
Yeah. Did you want to get into it?
Sure.
Okay.
Start with Beyond and then go into the old school.
Okay. Yeah. But VHS Beyond, I know there was a lot of familiar directors who have made their return from the previous VHS films, as well as Kate Siegel, who is the star of Hush and is also in Haunting in Hill House, has appeared in Oculus, is the wife of Mike Flanagan, actually. Mm-hmm. And they're a really good team together. But she was one of the directors that, you know, kind of, you know, steered a pedal in here, as well as Justin Long and his wife, Christian Long.
Okay, okay.
Also making a little bit of their directional.
Oh, so this one is kind of like a husband and wife dual team story making.
Yeah, they have one segment that is completely different from all the other ones.
Okay.
They did a segment called Fur Babies. So that one was sort of my least favorite, but that's only because it's different from what the overall theme is going for.
What is the theme for fur babies? Is it furry community
So you know what? You know how Tusk went down, right?
Yes.
So think Tusk, but instead it's dogs.
Okay, no thank you.
And I just found it so funny that it had to be Justin Long to do that one. It's basically Tusk with dogs.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. You're giving away too much already.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry. But that one was my least favorite one. If I'm going to be honest, a lot of these, and I know I haven't seen all the other VHS movies, two being my favorite because every single one of those segments go hard.
Oh, yeah.
I think a lot of the segments in here go pretty hard, especially the first one. The first one would probably have to be my favorite. That one is just called Stork. And that is all I'm going to say. All I'm going to say is that segment really kicked off very action-packed, very bloody, in-your-face segment.
Does it involve skydiving?
No, but that is the...
Because I did see a clip from it, and I was like, what is this? And like, oh my God, this is VHS Beyond, and I stopped watching.
That one was called Live and Let Dive.
Okay.
It has
its own title. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That one was my second favorite, actually. I think I think you're going to enjoy that. I think the director did a segment back in the 99 one, which I didn't see.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of promise in that one.
Okay.
You know. Again, I love how the overall theme tends to lean a little bit more towards a lot of cosmic horror, a lot of
science fiction-y kind of an ode
to, like, not necessarily direct, but definitely an inspiration of the H.P. Lovecraft vibe.
Okay.
So that's why this one really pulled me back in.
There's been segments in the other anthologies that kind of have, you know, that cosmic horror vibe.
Absolutely. Lovecraft vibe absolutely. Too, yeah. And this one kind of embraces that just a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit more of that very alien, very creature, very body horror related things that, yeah.
My favorite from the very first one is the siren one.
The siren one is a good one.
Oh, I forget what she's been in so many other horror movies since, that actress.
And I know, because
they also did a...
like a spinoff, right?
A spinoff film based on that segment alone.
Yeah.
So yeah, the whole siren wing succubus thing, I don't know what you would call her.
I thought it was a gargoyle, but
gargoyle. Yeah. This Tales from the Dark Side.
That's a good one.
The Dark Side, the movie. You seen it?
Yes. I have. Very disturbing.
Yes.
That's with was that Lance Henriksen or was that somebody else?
Just James Remar.
James Remar,
in that segment.
Yeah.
James Remar is an artist and a gargoyle, a living gargoyle.
I love how James Remar just always has like these really weird side character roles. Like, You know, like you look at his filmography, he's in a lot of movies, but he's barely a focus.
That's why, you know, he excelled as the father figure to the Dexter character in the Dexter series.
Mm.
Yeah. He plays the adopted father of this kid that was traumatic and has that. He knew from a young age, this guy, James Remar's character, knew that this kid is going to grow up to be a killer.
Yeah.
Kind of deal, right? But okay. So steers him in the way of being more of a vigilante serial killer. A killer of killers kind of deal. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's basically the, So James Remar, he's in that. And I knew of his work ever since The Warriors. I grew up watching The Warriors. He was Ajax. He was
that always, one I still got to see.
You know what? I would suggest you pick up a copy. Because you told me you're not doing this for Lent, so I'm...
I'm not buying any new physical media.
Yeah, but if in the later months when it pops up after Easter,
okay,
if you find a copy somewhat of the original theatrical release of The Warriors, that's the best one.
Why are there other versions of it?
They're on DVD back when they released. It coincided with the release of The Warriors PlayStation 2.
Okay.
Video game that came out. Okay, so it's where like a lot of consoles that came
out. So Warriors is an action film.
It's an action. It's
like action thriller.
I say okay, more like act like gang thriller.
Okay.
The 1970s, late 70s. So
gotcha.
Yeah, very flashy, very kind of think of like Mad Max, but in the streets of Brooklyn kind of deal.
Okay. I was going to say, it looks very Mad Max meets Assault on Precinct 13.
Yeah, but it's like disco days. And like, to tell you the truth, though, from history, from facts, that late 70s, gangs were like that in that city. Like, you know, Brooklyn, Harlem, Bronx, they were all gangs and they would have all different colors and we're kind of crazy, kind of, you know.
Yeah, very outfits thematic.
Yeah. Okay. But they're very brutal gangs.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. I mean, nothing compared to now, you know, we got the cartel. But James Remar. Wow, we just went off topic.
I forgot James how Remar. We got here from VHS. Yeah. It's from VHS to Gargoyles.
He worked as a villain. He was a good villain in 48 Hours with Nick Nolte and
Murphy. Yes, I remember that one.
Yeah.
I did watch that recently. Yeah.
James Remar. Okay, so back to VHS Beyond.
Yeah.
Is it streaming anywhere right now? Or
I think you got to have Shudder.
Shudder's got it.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, I bought the Blu-ray, you know, about a couple months ago. And
I should have picked up the DVD when I had the chance as well, but it's no longer on the shelf.
Really?
The stores.
Really? I swear I saw it yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. I had to
do a double check today then.
Yeah.
Pick up VHS, man. I got to pick it up.
That one was a good one. But
I
liked it. I think it was my favorite one since 2, and I know I've only ever seen two of the other ones.
So is the Fur Babies one your least favorite, or is there another least favorite segment? Because I know there's like at least six or something stories.
There's the overall like story arc. That one didn't really grasp my attention too well, but the end of that one definitely freaked me out. There is a segment that I think, if I'm going to be honest, I think Kate Siegel's one was kind of very brief to me.
Mm.
It felt like, you know, because it's the last one,
okay,
of the thing. You know, in a way, of its imagery, of its like storytelling, it was okay, but because what really makes me mad is when it comes down to the VHS quality of these things, and it's funny because they even poke fun of that inside of the overall story arc that wraps all these segments around.
Okay,
is that, you know, just sometimes like the really scratchy videotape quality, and you can't tell what's really going on. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, now I gotta go online and read, what am I looking at? Like, you know, it's like, you could decipher it of all these disturbing, like weird imagery that is going on, but they're not gonna hold your hand and tell you what it is, and now you gotta go find an explanation online.
With watching the series, like the you know, from what I have already seen.
Right.
When it comes down to it, VHS is basically paying homage to how it was in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Because there was a situation where, like, some areas of the world, you couldn't get a lot of horror movies.
Yeah.
So they had to be dubbed and bootlegged.
Yeah.
Sold on the black market. And when they get that copy, it's like the most horrendous, but they're watching the film.
Right.
Otherwise, you know? Yeah.
I think you might like the Indian one. There's a...
Indian.
There's a...
Chief Woodenhead. Chief Show 2.
Not that Indian.
Okay. You have to remind yourself of Creepshow 2. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Like, old Chief Woodenhead.
Like there's a little bit of a Bollywood flavor in...
Oh, okay.
One of the segments.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
But I think you're going to enjoy that one. That one and Stork and Live and Let Dive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think you're going to enjoy some of those.
Well, I watch 84... 84, 85. One of those. It's one of the 80s ones.
See, now I got to see what order did they just jumped around.
Yeah, but the last one I watched was pretty good, but there are segments that was like kind of lacking. The ones that I enjoyed was the Mexican storyline where it's like an earthquake in the 80s in Mexico City.
Okay. And I never saw that one.
Yeah, okay. And it was like this group of people that were actually there to shoot something else.
Yeah.
Ended up getting caught in the earthquake, and they go further and further down into the center of this building, and it opens up to a cave where there's like shamanic symbols on the wall, demonic things, you know, and possibly... like a hell mouth kind of situation deal.
Yeah,
opening up. Yeah, no, that was an interesting one. I like that one.
I will forever love VHS 2. I think every segment in there gets me.
Yeah.
And that one goes pretty hard too, like with the ghost being seen through the eye transplants, the GoPro zombie one.
Yeah. I like that one.
What was that other one? There was the sleepover with the kids and the alien abduction one.
Yeah.
That one goes pretty hard.
That was pretty good.
And the one iconic segment in that one was the safe haven. The Indonesian
The
cult and everything like that.
They had several segments in the series so far. There's like, you know, there's cult kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was kind of Lovecrafty and kind of idea too, because you know, you don't know what they're summoning here within this cult. And very like Paranormal Activity, Asian horror style.
Yeah, those ones give me the heebie-jeebies.
Oh, yeah. Did you ever see, it's a quick question, have you ever seen the ABCs of Death?
I think I've seen...
The first one?
The first one, bits and pieces of two.
Mm-hmm.
And when I mean bits and pieces by two, I mean, like, there was always a segment that somebody wanted to show me on YouTube.
Yeah.
And So one I've actually seen from beginning to end. I can't say I can remember all of them.
Me neither.
Two, I've only seen certain letters of that movie because of the iconic YouTube videos that I've been shown. Because people were like, oh, that was really crazy. I gotta show you that.
Yeah. One of the more disturbing ones I saw was like the body horror clip where she's like, "Oh, I want to be beautiful," and she skins herself down.
I did see that one.
Yeah.
That was hard to watch.
That
man.
Was No, those ones go pretty harder than VHS the VHS anthology.
And then
series,
I saw that one called Libido. Remember that?
There's a lot of very over the top like adult oriented themes,
really twisted
segments. I was watching, like, I didn't know what I was getting myself into one day, and I was in the back. This is way back when like Netflix had really good movies.
Yeah,
and then I put this one on, and I'm sitting there watching, and all of a sudden it goes into like, boy, what you watching? I don't know. It's one of the alphabets. It's one of the ABCs. It's one of the ABCs. They're teaching me something. Yeah. Okay. But yeah. There's so many good anthology. I mean, you got your classic ones, Creepshow, Stephen King and Romero's. That's absolute classic. That one freaks my mom out.
Which one?
To the fullest. The first Creepshow.
Okay.
Creepshow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's Stephen King, George Romero. I don't know who else did work on that one, but Tom Savini did most of the special effects on there. But the one that freaks my mom out, which I hate to say, this might be something that puts the fear into a lot of people in Hawaii, because it's Hawaii, we have these problems, and it's a segment at the end where it's the guy, the rich man in his little apartment, and it's overrun by roaches.
Oof.
The roach that segment, one was, the very last one.
That one was hard to watch, man.
Yeah.
That was the second movie, right?
That was the first one.
That's the first one.
That's the first one. Yeah. That one creeps my mom out to this day. And we have to deal with that. Because, you know, you'd be like just chilling. And then all of a sudden, watch that. Yes. The flyer. Oh, I don't like flyers. Keep the flyers away. It's scary. Everybody knows in Hawaii about the flyers. They know the flyers. Anyways,
get your slippers out.
Yeah. So the second film you watch is a classic, I believe to be very a very amazing classic slasher film from the 80s. Yet it features veteran actors in the film.
Veteran actors.
Very veteran. Yeah. I mean, legends to say at that point.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, tell us about that one.
Alone in the Dark, 1982, is actually Mr. Tony's recommendation, and I finally got around to finally watching it. This one has a...
I myself have to rewatch it.
Yeah. This one had... What's her name? Jack Palance. They had Donald Pleasance. They had Martin Landau. And then, I keep forgetting the guy who played the doctor. Dwight Schultz.
Yeah. I'll have to see the face.
So, this one was written and directed by Jack Scholder, and it is about the group of mental patients who break out of the asylum during a blackout and decide to rain siege on their doctor's family.
Don't they all just break out of a mental asylum?
They do, but then the four of them are the ones that just kind of... just spearheaded. I honestly thought this movie would have just taken place in one night. Mm-hmm. I think I would have liked that better, but there was...
It's like a whole week going on.
Like a week or 2 days.
Yeah.
I didn't mind that because it did make a little more sense for what the fourth particular patient, what happened, that little twist at the end with him. Mm-hmm. That made more sense of how that had to happen.
Yes.
So I can see why they needed two nights or whatever. I just love the denial that the doctor, which is more of our main character, I just love how he's just trying to keep his family calm while they're, you know, because like you watch a lot of other home invasion movies.
Yeah.
And it is just crazy and frenetic. And then you got like the one father, the one character who's like, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. I was like, dude,
it's gonna be fine.
They killed the cop already.
Yeah.
They killed the cop already. Don't even think you're safe anymore.
Thank God, man. Tell you what.
Yeah, but at first, I'm not going to lie. I was my patience was growing a little bit because I was like, nobody's dying yet. It's been a while.
It's one of those story driven.
Yeah.
First, you got to really understand what's going on.
So I did like that they took their time to flesh out the family. Mm-hmm. I like that we got a little more time to really kind of get into the very loony mindset of our antagonists, because they didn't just seem like random crazy people. It was nice to kind of know what each person was capable of, what kind of drove a lot of their tics. And I feel like a lot of what they were trying to bring upon, and this was 1982, they were really just trying to shed a lot of light in the message about, you know, mental health and how it goes, you know, uncared for, how it gets easily dismissed, and just some of the state of minds of people. Because, you know, I love that final showdown where Jack Palance, he's like, you see, it's not just crazy people who kill, mm-hmm. you know. He's like, we all kill, and then I just love that. I love that face to face with the doctor and Jack Palance.
Amazing he got that out of this movie, because when it first released back in the 80s, nobody was thinking that. They're thinking this is a bunch of psychos.
Yeah,
that's killing people.
There's that one. There's a little bit of a, how do I say? There's a little bit of a story arc that they don't ever really flesh mm-hmm. out, but there seems to be a terrible childhood trauma that happened with the doctor's sister. The one that comes to visit them, and she has like this fear of the dark, but we never really dive into it. And then there's a scene where while they're locking up the house and boarding it up, there's a mm-hmm. scene where she hears a noise towards the window. She goes into the window, and then there's this random, like, deformed, burnt up and, you know, person or creature dead mm-hmm. thing that mm-hmm. comes out of the window and grabs her. And it's a really effective jump scare.
Yeah.
And then when she runs and they grab her, they're like, nobody's there. And then there is the windows are still intact.
Mm.
Nothing is over there. It was such a random jump scare. And you're like, what happened to the sister when, mm-hmm. you know, when they were younger? They never really dive so much into that. But I'm always like, it mm-hmm. kind of kept me wondering. I was like, wow. You know, you're also not dealing with the mental state of our mental patients, but you're also dealing with the mental distress of, you know, your protagonists who are just regular people.
It could almost be considered like almost like a Giallo style driven mm-hmm. type of storyline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's even that scene where they go to that music club where, you know, they're going to see an art like a band mm-hmm. who are singing Chop Up Your Mother. And there's all these, like, very Looney Tune of characters and, like, you know, thugs and, you know, mm-hmm. just people just cutting loose. And they are just as crazy as the mental patients.
Yeah.
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 Oh, yeah. Man. So,
revisit this film, yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot how good it was. The first time, I didn't even watch the full movie in the beginning because I saw it as a clip. Like, several clips of the film made it to a compilation film that was released back in 1986 or 7. And it was weird because I rented this at Paradise Video back in the day, not knowing what it was. I popped it into the video, the VCR, and I'm watching it. And you got Donald Pleasence, you got Nancy Allen, you got... I forget, an array of other actors in a movie theater
mm-hmm.
that are presenting clips from films, stories from the films, behind the scenes. You talk to Hitchcock, stuff like that, and then it's all like, it was just a compilation of films that I have never seen yet or have seen at the time, and I want to see. So that's what led me to going to find out and be like, oh, you guys have this movie on the shelf? And then I started mm-hmm. watching Alone in the Dark. I started renting on movies like Cat People and Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then there's segments on Halloween. And then some segments on like The Exorcist. And then when it came down to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre segment, there's this whole thing where it's like, that was the film that let people know, oh yeah, it is based on a true story.
Yeah.
Ever heard of Ed Gein?
Yeah.
A serial killer, Ed Gein, back in the... Yeah, you know, one of those deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, did you hear that they're casting... sorry, because you brought up Ed Gein. Did you hear that they're doing a season of American Crime Story or whatever?
Is that on Netflix?
Yes.
Okay.
But I don't know if it's... I don't think it's out yet. It's in development for... I think it's what? It's third season. They're casting Charlie Hunnam to do the Ed Gein story.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
and that's like a full like 8 episodes per season kind of deal on the whole story.
Because I think they're following the monster, the American crime monster ones.
Okay,
like you know, like in the same vein of like.
I saw clips from this show. They did like episodes where they talk to Charles Manson. It's like Charles Manson is in there and like other. Ted Bundy and the serial killers and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So I think I think they're developing that side
Ed
story.
Gein, there you go. Tell you what, that's what Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Psycho is based on. Yeah, they did do an Ed Gein movie back in the day,
mm-hmm.
and it was Steve Railsback that played the Ed Gein character. And then back in the 70s, there's a film called Deranged, which I think if you try and see if you can find that anywhere streaming. If not, save after Lent. Put it down on the list. After Lent, you got to get this film. I think I've seen like a copy. Umbrella might have had it in the... I don't know. I'm not sure. Some kind of boutique media group has released Deranged recently or in the past. And it's called... Deranged is a movie that's based on the Ed Gein story, but like changing the names and stuff like that. Right. But the actor that plays the Ed Gein-like character is the... if I'm remembering correctly, the South Bend Shovel Slayer.
Okay.
Yeah, and the South Bend Shovel Slayer, he goes up and down the neighborhood and salting the sidewalks. And from what Buzz told me, the salt, he puts the bodies in the salt, and the salt turns the bodies to mummies.
This is the same actor.
It's the same actor, yeah.
Oh, he's also in Close Encounters, Quick and the Dead, Christine.
I keep forgetting he's in Close Encounters. That's right. He was like one of those guys like, oh, get up, get ready, they're coming this week.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. So Deranged is the 1974 movie.
Yeah.
A rural farmer becomes a grave robber and murderer after the death of his possessive mother. Yeah, that's exactly
that's
like...
That's Ed Gein. Yes. It's the South Bend Shovel Slayer. He was actually a killer in the film.
Okay. Yeah, so unfortunately, that one is streaming on MGM Plus.
MGM.
You pay to rent it on Prime or something.
Shucks. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Anyways, yes, Alone in the Dark, really good film, among other amazing films. I mean, when it comes down to those actors, I mean, it's Donald Pleasence. Donald Pleasence played in so many horror films. People forget that he was in a string of Hammer horror films back in the day, too, prior to getting the job. But then originally, a lot of these guys, people forget, like, oh, these dudes are only horror guys. Nah, they're classically trained actors. It just so happened to have got a calling in that genre. You know, I see Christopher Lee in other films.
Yeah.
But of course, when you see him in other films, you'd be like, he still looks like Dracula.
Or he's
called Dooku. Yeah, no, that's Dracula.
Yeah. What is it? Oh my God, I am such a...
He was in Lord of the Rings as well, I believe.
Yeah. See, you say that like, oh, casual. But that's what a lot of people know him from.
Christopher Lee.
Oh, it's that guy. It's,
Yeah,
it's Saruman.
Yeah, he's from Lord of the Rings. That's right. We remember him. It's Count Dooku, yeah. But then I'm over here going, Dracula. He played Dracula like in 9 films, you guys.
Come on.
Come on.
Get it right. Okay,
so on my end, so last week, I watched Crimes of the Future, which was David Cronenberg's return to sci-fi horror body type horror films. So I talked about that one when I was here, and Barry was here, and you guys were talking about the monkey.
Yes.
And then I said, I was supposed to do it as a double feature and watch Infinity Pool. Well, I didn't do it last week. I did it this week. So now we're going to talk about Brandon Cronenberg. His 23 horror sci-fi science fiction horror film, Infinity Pool. Alexander Skarsgård. When I saw the film, I was like thinking, I'm one of those guys that don't pay attention to the credits.
Okay.
You know, I'm doing something else while the credits are running.
Yeah.
And so I wait till like the first like shot of whatever, and I hear like, oh, they're talking in the dark. Why are they talking in the dark? Okay, I know. It's going to be one of those opening scenes. But then I looked at the guy, and I was like, he looks so familiar. Isn't he a Skarsgård?
Yep.
And then I think, shoot, I forget. Wait, hold on a second.
I grew up with Alexander Skarsgård on True Blood.
You know, True Blood.
True Blood, and then he just started booming in movies, man.
Yeah.
I love it.
What is the He was in a Straw Dogs remake.
Yeah, yeah.
Battleship. He was in Battleship.
Godzilla versus Kong.
Godzilla versus Kong.
Oh, the right. Northman.
Yeah. No, I have not seen The Northman yet.
What?
I have to see The Northman. Yeah.
You have to see The Northman.
It's a whole bunch of movies that he did. Alexander Skarsgård. He's the middle kid? Is he in the middle?
I know.
Bill's the youngest.
I know Alexander's older than Bill. That's all
okay.
I know.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I can't keep up with all of them.
Yeah, Mia Goth and Cleopatra Coleman and then a bunch of other actors who I don't recognize them. Yeah, yeah. But
it's okay.
Overall, everybody acted their characters. This movie is just, it's phenomenal. All I can say, it's almost, you know, I posted in a comment, somebody asked me, how did you like the movie? And I was like, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. The kid's got chops like his dad. I swear to God, that's what I was thinking. So I just put it down in the comments. I hope they liked it. But it's almost like he's taking a page from some of his father's older work. Because when I'm watching a film, I kind of get the feeling like I'm watching Shivers, or I'm watching like Scanners or Rabbit, you know, some of his early stuff. Mm-hmm. But with more of a modern take. And you're right, when you talk about, I never seen White Lotus, but I can kind of tell, I can kind of see how that, you know, that storyline works out. Because this is it's about a bunch of people that, you know, vacationing. And again, when it comes down to the Cronenbergs, they like to create places and people and things that... Yeah.
This is a fictional place.
It's a very fictional place. I'm thinking maybe adjacent to like a Greek islands or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a society of people that do things differently. Almost not dystopian, but kind of like a martial law type of people. Right? Yeah. Like, you know, it's a country that, you know, if you do things the wrong way, bad things happen to you.
Any crime is pretty much sentenced to death.
Sentenced to death. Any crime. You steal, you do anything like that. So you follow this group of people, a couple, and then they meet another couple, Mia Goth being one of the ladies that he meets, kind of infatuation, kind of, I don't know what the word is. Infatuated, whatever.
Infatuated with him.
Yeah, kind of, it's him and her, vice versa kind of deal going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a certain scene where I'm like, Mia Goth. Wish that was me. yeah. But then, again, you come to find out, like, this country, again, you could put to death immediately for any crime. They make his character, this guy's character, Kate, they're all drunk. They're not supposed to be where they are. And then they end up killing one of the people of this
little
island, one of the locals, right? And then the whole situation, you get introduced to like how the government breaks down, you know, these events, how they get, you know, they take you in. You know, they do the same thing, but it's completely different. You get to find out now that, you know, you can be executed right now. But there's a plan B. There's a plan A, you die. Plan B, you don't die, yet you die.
You
kind
can,
of situation.
You can pay for your clone to take your place.
Yeah. I wonder, they never say how much it is, but I'm pretty sure it's a hefty sum that goes directly back to this country or whatever.
Because, again, these are rich people, and I feel like this government only offers this to the rich people because they can afford it, and it is just nothing that the locals are ever going to be presented by mercy. And so you kind of see that privilege. Yeah.
This is once it got to that part though, that's when I started understanding, oh, that's why earlier on some other guy, some tourist was going nuts. And I'm like, what's the situation here? He comes to find out after he experiences the double. The double effect, you go into, I'm guessing what they would call the infinity pool, where you can clone you.
Yeah.
And in your place, the clone is executed.
Right.
Yeah. But he kind of finds it a little too enjoyable.
There's a bit of a power trip.
So, yeah. And they come to find out, you know, the couple that they were hanging out with, they're part of a group of people that are kind of like, yeah, we get off on this, you know? Taking a cue from his dad, because last week I mentioned a Cronenberg film called Crash.
And yes, you did.
I kind of feel like this is kind of like he's building off a little bit of what, you know, what his father, like, kind of getting inspiration from some of his father's older work. Mm-hmm. Because Crash is about a group of people that get a little spicy when it comes to, like, witnessing crashes in the streets. Mm-hmm. You can't imagine that. There's a total traumatic crash in the streets, and you got this group of people walking around going, ah, wow, licking their chops and stuff.
Oh, wow.
One of those. Okay. So now you have a group of people in this film who get off on watching themselves die.
Watching themselves die, committing crimes.
Committing crimes to the fullest. Yeah. I kind of got a little bit of a Clockwork Orange kind of deal going on here.
Because, I'm glad you got that, too.
Yeah, because they're the group of people kind of like, oh, we're high society.
Yeah,
you know,
we can do whatever we want.
We can do whatever we
no
want.
No consequences.
We're not going to die, but the double of us.
Yeah.
And it's so strange, too, how they acted out. That first round where, like, they created complete chaos to get to a point where I'm like sitting there like, oh, it's not going the way they thought it was going to go. And then you get to a point in that part of the scene and you go like, oh, wait, it went exactly the way they wanted it to go. And I'm like, That was good trickery, right? It was tricked, dude. This is the first time a movie, like a long time I've seen a movie where a movie's going to trick you at one point.
Yeah.
And this is really good. And then from there on, it just progresses into like this psychosexual acid trip between these people causing chaos and doing like hallucinatory drugs. Like, I don't know. What is that? What are they burning? Mushrooms?
Man. Oh, man. I'm not going to lie to you, man. I almost had like a... I felt so seizure-induced. My head was hurting. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it. That orgy scene?
Yeah.
It's an orgy scene.
Yeah.
That whole orgy scene was so very like strobe lighting and everything like that. I was like, okay, like my eyes are sore.
Right. I can see where he's coming from because a lot of his dad's early work was very psychosexual kind of idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, Shivers Alone is about a group of people in a apartment building that are slowly infected by a sexual parasite.
That Shivers?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. There's some weird sexual thing happening in that one where it's like the parasite's infected them, you know, and they're all getting infected and they become like sexual zombies kind of deal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But coming from that, and plus so many of the other freaking films from the 70s are just insane. There's movies that came out that had they do that. They like to get that hallucinatory acid trip vibe in the film. So I'm not gonna say like it's nothing I haven't seen before, but it's just done in a more modern light. And then there's imagery in there, and I'm like I'm paying attention. I was like, wait, what? What's happening? Wait, no, that's. No, that orifice doesn't that doesn't happen with that orifice, kind of deal. That doesn't happen with that body part. Why is that body part doing that? It's not supposed to do that. You know, and you got all these weird kind of masks. It's kind of like unless it's supposed to be masks or adjacent to a ritual that happens on the island prior to the rain season.
Yeah, no. And then apparently, like, you know what those masks represented? Some kind of, like, god, right? Like, you know, and they were really just
Or maybe, like, the seven deadly sins or something like that.
But you see how they were having such a power trip.
Major power trip. And then it gets to the part where they trick him.
Oh,
he gets tricked.
where he kills
He thinks he, you know, he's like, we're gonna, I'm gonna beat up this guy, and then they pull the thing off and it's like, and then all of a sudden he has a conscience.
Yeah.
Finally he has a conscience. He had one at the beginning of the film, and then all of a sudden everything was just thrown out the window, and then he gets to a point where it's like, yeah.
Well, you see, in a way, it was kind of a trick in a way where he actually got his hands dirty. And I think that's where the psychology kind of, you know, kind of finally switched. Mm-hmm, because mm-hmm, you mm-hmm. notice how far away they sat when they have to watch themselves die.
Yeah.
You know, like they're in a place, they're in a spot where they don't need to get their hands dirty. Mm-hmm. Like where they are what are they doing is up to their comfort. Mm-hmm. And right there, he just felt a sense of out of control. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, like, the final third act really just, you know, wakens him up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, even towards, like, the final few frames of the movie, you just kind of, like, notice how he was just so shook and speechless when they get back onto mm-hmm. the bus trying to take them back home, that
and everybody like,
around them like it's nothing happened.
Yeah,
what are you gonna do when you get home?
You know me, yeah. I'm just gonna be around the house.
I'm not gonna lie, after I saw that ending, I really started to question a lot of the people that I work around. I was like, man, how much of these people that are walking past me mm-hmm. are psychopaths in their real lives? Like, how much of that? Like, it's kind of scary when you start to think about it. Like, yeah, these people are nice when they come mm-hmm. on vacation, but what are they like in their real lives?
If it's given crazy. A chance, if they go on vacation and they're given a chance to get away with whatever they want.
Yeah.
Yeah, that situation.
Yeah. What are you not seeing in front of these people? You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, but a really good film. I watched it on Hulu. It's available on Hulu, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, Infinity Pool, Brandon Cronenberg. Gotta go ahead and check out Possessor. Hopefully I can get I can stream the uncut version.
Yeah, I gotta watch the uncut version of Infinity Pool, actually, because that one
There's an uncut version?
Yeah.
Is there more to the orgy scene?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Oh no, not that body part again. It's gonna be a snake now.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a snake.
Yeah, but I know the I know the unrated cut is only on that steelbook that came out from Decal.
Decal. Oh, okay. All right. Cool. Awesome. So got like 9 minutes left in the show. I did want to get back to talking about a show that I only watched 2 seasons of, then I stopped, but I picked it back up. What We Do in the Shadows.
Okay.
Yeah. Really good show.
Yeah.
Produced by Taika Waititi. Taika Waititi. Yeah. The man behind Thor. Well, the new variation of Thor. He did.
Jojo Rabbit.
He did Jojo Rabbit, but
Next Go Wins.
Which Thor? He did 2 Thor movies, right?
So he did Ragnarok. He did Love and Thunder.
Love and Thunder, that's right.
So he did the last 2 ones.
Yeah, and I love Jojo Rabbit. Mm. Yeah, okay. It was interesting. Yeah, and he played the Hitler role.
Did he? I don't know. Yeah, I've never seen it.
He was Hitler.
Okay.
Yeah, the whole idea of Jojo Rabbit is like off topic, but we gotta talk about Taika Waititi because Jojo Rabbit is one of the most surprisingly entertaining dark humor film or dark comedy film to come out in like recent years. Okay, and you're following the storyline of a kid during World War II and Nazi occupied areas.
Yeah.
So basically, but it's done in a comedic sense. So it's like it's almost like if the Nazis were like Monty Python or if they were like Saturday Night Live type characters. Yeah.
Okay.
I forget the name.
So it's satire.
Sam Rockwell is amazing in that film.
Okay.
And I believe it's Toni Collette is also in that film.
I think so.
I believe
so. And Scarlett Johansson.
And I get that Taika Waititi playing Hitler.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hitler. He plays the kid's imaginary version of Hitler.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. So that's where a lot of the comedy comes from. Yeah.
in his imagination.
Yeah. It's okay. Like, yeah, it's like you know, it's like you watching like a kids show, like a Disney kids show, but doing Nazi times.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not really themed for kids. It's not PG-13, everybody. So yeah. But what we do in the shadows follows the story of it's The Office meets Anne Rice. I believe that's what I take from it. It's The Office meets Anne Rice, and you follow the characters of what's their names?
I don't know. I've never seen it.
You never seen the show?
I've never seen the show. I always see the trailers though. They look so funny.
You get it to okay, the main character, Nandor the Relentless, the Relentless. Leslie Laszlo Cravenworth. Is that the I don't know what character this play. Is this the movie or is it a TV show? It's a TV show. Nadja of Antipaxos. Okay, so they're all like she's the oldest, I think. No. Is he the oldest? 760-year-old. Laszlo is 310 years old, whereas Nadja is a 500-year-old Greek Romani vampire. They all have an accent, basically. One has a British accent. And then you have their familiar, who is Guillermo de la Cruz. He is a gay familiar, a gay nerdy familiar, who's in love with, I think, the Nandor character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he really wants Nandor to change him into a vampire. It hasn't happened yet. Yeah, but he's...
Yeah, because didn't he fly off the stairs and break his leg or something?
Something like that. I forget which one, but...
Oh, yeah, you can't fly like us, sorry.
Yeah. And then you have Colin Robinson, who's a vampire. He's an energy vampire. I feel like he would be like... what is Rainn Wilson's character from The Office? I forget.
Yeah, Dwight.
Dwight, yeah. Dwight. He would be a Dwight. He's the Dwight of what we do in the shadows.
Is he just like the correction police?
He's an energy vampire. And the way he gets the energy from humans, the way he drains his energy to prolong his vampiric immortality in life, he bores them. Not to death. But maybe on the verge, just enough, So he works in an office where he day to day just like bores people to the point where that's how he gets his energy. And like he bores them and he walks away and he's like, energized kind of deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm picking up from season 3. Last season, Guillermo, they come to find out that he's also he's part of a lineage of people. So the lineage he's a part of is Van Helsing.
Oh my gosh.
He's part of that family lineage. He has the blood, Van Helsing blood in him. Yeah. So apparently a long time ago, his great grandma from Mexico met a relative of the Van Helsing blood. And then apparently the whole family of Van Helsings, they were all vampire hunters, I guess. So he comes to find out, I guess I have Van Helsing blood. And he just stakes himself. He's like, he has a bandolier full of stakes.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's like, I must protect my masters, because he's a familiar and he needs to save his masters from the death of the vampire council. And he ends up killing all the vampires. Cameo by Wesley Snipes as Blade.
Or
a Blade-like character. That last season, the finale of season 2, there was so much cameos of popular actors playing vampires. And
okay.
Yeah. This season, I'm not seeing too much, but it's basically... continuing on what's happening since Guillermo killed off the vampire council. Okay. It's upon those three to become the new Eastern Seaboard masters of the vampire council.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you have Colin Robinson is trying to find out, what about the history of energy vampires? And it's like they have a library full of like tons of stuff about the history of vampires, but nothing about energy vampires. So I think there's like a little like side story there of him finding out about his race of vampires.
Right.
Because they're like not really talked about as much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas the other vampires, you know, they're very prevalent. Yeah. And then there's a situation that within their vampire council dungeon, they locked away is the vampire of all vampires, and they're not supposed to let him out. So I haven't gotten to the episode yet. I'm pretty sure they're gonna let him out at some point. And he's one of those all-powerful vampire types.
All-powerful types.
Yeah, yeah. Don't let him out. He might cause some trouble. Yeah. And, you know, because it's Hulu, it's uncensored, completely uncensored. I don't know if they actually, like, you know, they have cable now. They have TV shows that can actually have bad words and stuff.
Yeah.
But for Hulu, it's still censored because there's things that are very adult-oriented.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of like it's like this. It's like The Office meets Anne Rice meets American Pie. Because apparently these vampires, what they like to do the most is drink blood and F.
Really? I didn't think it was that kind of show.
Yeah, but all the other times it's them just being bumbling idiots.
Okay.
Yeah. The most dumbest vampires to ever be given some type of like some kind of responsibility. Yeah. Right. They can't handle it. They're kids. They're still teenagers at 500 years old. So, again, that's it for the Thursday afternoon frights here on the local show. I have a special guest next week, and we won't return for another 2 weeks. But when then we do return, hopefully I'll have some review on Nosferatu and a whole bunch of other horror flicks.
I'll try to find some stuff to share. Absolutely.
Yes, sir. Because
I don't think I'm going to see you for like another 2 weeks. So
that's right. You're going to be off island. You're going to have a vacay time. All right. Okay. That's it, everybody. Aloha. Right.
Aloha.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you, dear?
Good.
Well, what are you doing tonight?
Having an orgy. You want to come?
You're having an orgy. You're having an orgy.
Yeah.
Oh my gracious! How many people you got over there having the orgy?
Four. We got four, but you said it takes six.
Well, it takes about 12 really for a nice orgy. I mean,
we need some friends.
Huh? Well, we got about 32 people here at the radio station. Maybe we bring them over. You understand what I mean?
Sure thing.
All right. Maybe Sam Hall like to come over, too, you know?
Sure thing.
Kihei Charter's open house informational sessions will be held at its campus on March 8th, March 13th, and March 25th. The March 13th and March 25th meetings will be held at 5 p.m., and the March 8th meeting will be held at 3 p.m., Registration will be for the 2025-2026 school year. The school is a free public school and does not charge tuition. All applicants must be Maui residents. Children must be 5 years old on or before July 31st of the school year to enter kindergarten.
Maui's free speech station. KAKU 88.5 FM, Kahului, Maui. The voice of Maui.
Calling all stations. Clear the air lanes. Clear all air lanes for the big broadcast.
The Sonic Cafe.
Got your motor running. Head out on the highway.
All right, let's get the show on the road.
Come on.
Try the radio.
Featuring intelligent, eclectic music, comedy, and pop culture.
For the radio still works.
funny as that may seem, with all this mess, that the radio is the only thing that's really working good.
We're the Sonic FM.